Let's begin with the workbook, page 37, and go over as quickly as possible some of these exercises here. On 38 and 39, I'll go quickly, I'm sure. And this is talking about the square of opposition. Page 46 in your book, the square of opposition. A and E are opposed as what? If you can do it without looking at your book, what are A and E opposed as? Contraries. They're opposed as contraries. I and O are opposed as, yes sir?
Subcontraries.
A and O, what are they opposed as?
Contradictories.
E and I, contradictories. Blank means that from the truth of A or E, one can validly infer the truth of E or, I'm sorry, of I or O, respectively. You can validly infer the truth of A, I from E and O from, I'm sorry, I'm getting these confused. I from A and O from E. What is that? The vertical, subalternation. Okay? That was number 5. Given the falsity of I or O, one can validly infer the falsity of A or E, respectively, by what? Given the falsity of I or O, one can validly infer the falsity of A or E. Subalternation. Blank may both be false together. Anyone? See a hand anywhere? What may both be false together? Contraries may both be false together. Blank may both be true together. Subcontraries. Now starting with number 9. If A is true, then E is what? And you don't have to give me the letters if you want to give me the words. If A is true, E is what?
False.
I is what? Okay. O is what? If A is true, O is what? False. It's a contradictory. It has to be false. Yes, sir? True. If E is true, look, that's the upper right-hand corner of the square. If E is true, then A is what? False. I is what?
False.
It has to be false. And O? O is true. If I is true, going down to the lower left, if I is true, then E is what?
False.
A is what? It's in the best you can say, and I should have clarified that earlier, the best you can say is inconclusive on that. That's inconclusive. And O is, if I is true, then O is, it's inconclusive again. It may be true. Number 12. If O is true, down in the lower right-hand corner now, if O is true, then E is, okay, A is what?
False.
And I is what? Okay. Number 13 and 14, I think, this is an error in the workbook, repeat 15 and 16. No, they don't. I'm sorry. I thought it did, but it doesn't. If A is true, then E, that's the same as 9. Okay. If E is true, then A, that's the same as 10. If I is true, is this a duplicate as well? Okay, let's skip the duplicates. If one of the subcontraries, this is number 17, is true, then a pair of diagonals will be, one of the subcontraries is true, then a pair of diagonals will be what? I think it's inconclusive. It may be, but not necessarily. If one of the contraries, looking at the contraries at the top now, is false, then a pair of diagonals will be one of the contraries is false. That means either A or E. And then a pair of diagonals will be one of the contraries, A or E, is false. It's inconclusive again. Let's run through the next few questions quickly. Particular forms share which of the following characteristics? Anyone have an answer on this one? Particular forms share which of the following characteristics? Both have undistributed subjects. Universal forms, number 20. Universal forms share which of the following characteristics? Yes. Both distribute their subjects. The following statement translates into which of the following? All but a few students will pass this test. This again deals with translation into categorical form. All but a few students will pass this test. A and C. And the following statement translates into which of the following? All except employees may enter. A and B. The following, you always squirm out of an argument. We've had this example several times. What's the correct translation? Okay. Number 24, if A and B are coextensive, then which of these follow? If A and B are coextensive, remember this is the Euler circle. Yes, go ahead.
All B is A.
All B is A is true. Anything else? That's right. All of them are true. All of the above. If A and B are mutually exclusive, now remember this is the diagram with the two circles, one labeled A and one labeled B, then which of these follow? All of those are true. All of those follow. So the correct answer is E. Which of the following are valid inferences? And let me read these so you have clear in your mind how they're to be read. The symbolism is to be read. From all, that is A, A, B is read. All A is B. We infer some A is B. Is that valid?
Yes,
it's valid. All A is B implies some A is B. From some A is B, we infer all A is B. Is that valid? No. From no A is B, we infer no B is A. Is that valid?
Yes,
that's valid. So the answer is A and C, or letter D there. Which of the following are valid inferences? From some A is B, we infer some B is A. Invalid? Does some A is B imply that some B is A? Yes, it does. It's valid. This brings up manipulation of the propositions that we haven't talked about yet. It's called simple conversion. You're simply reversing the predicate and the subject. That's all we've done here in letter A, 27A. We haven't changed the quality. It's still some. But we've said, rather than putting the A as the subject and the B as the predicate, we've made the B the subject and the A the predicate. It's called simple conversion. And it's valid in the forms I and E, some and no. And you can remember that because those are the vowels in simple. Simple conversion. How about some A is not B, we infer that some B is not A. Is that valid? That's right. If you were listening, I just gave you the answer. It's not valid in O, and it's not valid in A. From all A is B, we infer all B is A. No. Now think of your Euler circles again. All A is B can be the one circle labeled AB, or it can be the large circle labeled B with a small circle A inside of it. It can be represented either way. All A is B. And obviously, if you take it in the first sense, then you would, if you take it only in the first sense, then you could infer that all B is A. But that's not the extent of the meaning of all A is B. It also means that second diagram. And in that second diagram, you can't take it that way. So the conclusion is not true. The form of the conclusion is not true every time the forms of the premises are. So it's an invalid argument. Let's look at 28. If all men are mortal is true, which of the following is correct? No men are mortal is false. Is that correct? Yes, it is. Some men are not mortal is false. That is also a valid inference. Some men are mortal is true. That's also valid. So the answer is A, B, and C, or the letter D there. Take the true statement, saving faith is voluntary assent to a true biblical proposition. Which of the following is correct? Saving faith is voluntary assent to a true biblical proposition. Now, is that all saving faith or some saving faith?
It must be all.
It's okay, it's all saving faith. So it goes in the upper left-hand corner of the square of opposition.
Contrary false.
Okay, the first letter there, the contrary must be false. How about the subcontrary O? Okay. That's got to be false. How about the statement the contradictory is false?
Well,
that's a valid inference. But this is the contradictory in letter C here. And then in D, the subcontrary I is true. All of them, in fact, it has to be true. All of them, all of the above are valid inferences. All, recall that all A is B implies some A is B. Let's go on here at chapter 5, page 41 here, I want to call your attention to, in the outline, simple conversion. I've already talked briefly about that. It's simply switching the place of the subject and the predicate, and it's valid for E and I. It's not valid for A and O. Obversion. Does anybody recall what obversion was? It's contradicting the predicate and changing the quality of the proposition. And it's valid in all the forms, all four forms. And then contraposition, we talked about yesterday. Again, it's valid for A and O. Contraposition is changing the order of the subject and predicate and contradicting both of them. And it's valid for A and O. I hope you go ahead and define your terms there. Before we leave this, let's go on and do 43 and 44. And then we'll get into deeper into immediate inference. Blank is the simplest possible inference having a single premise and a conclusion. Immediate inference. Now, a little more symbolism here. If you've had math, you've seen this symbol before, and it means something a little different in math. If all A is B implies some A is B, that's how you read that symbolism in number two, the symbol, and then in quotation marks appears the symbol, means what? Means implies. Doesn't mean is less than, as in English. A difference in blank is a difference in term order. Now, we haven't talked about this yet in class. A difference in blank is a difference in term order, as in no A is B implies no B is A. Figure. Figure is the word we use for a difference in term order. Why don't we interrupt it here and look at page 49 in the text on immediate inference. At the bottom of the page here, on page 49, Clark has listed 16 different immediate inferences. Now, the way you read those, to make it simple, he's left out the small letter. In this case, the A stands for all A is B. The first one in the upper left-hand corner, you would read, all A is B implies all A is B. The second one is all A is B implies no A is B. Those small letters are understood here in this diagram. Reading down, right. The third one is all A is B implies some A is B. And the fourth one is all A is B implies some A is not B. He arrived at the 16, obviously, by listing four columns of the A's, the E's, the I's, and the O's, and then assigning all the possible all the possible conclusions to those premises. And you arrive at 16. Of those 16, there are six that are valid. 16 inferences, only six of them are valid. The other 10 are invalid. Can anybody take a guess as to which six are valid? Yes, sir. Okay, very good. Obviously, a proposition implies itself. So all the double letters, AA, EE, II, and OO, are valid inferences. But in addition to those, we have two others, AI, all A is B implies some A is B, and EO, no A is B implies some A is not B. This is all these 16, well, let me mention this first. Each of these is called a mood. A
a mood. Each of these individual instances is called a mood. A mood is a single inference. We have here a figure of 16 moods. In immediate inference, there are two figures. Now, figure we defined just now as changing the order of the subject and the predicate. And in the immediate inference, there are 16 more figures. I mean, 16 more moods, one more figure. And what do we mean when we change the order? Well, how do we read that? Well, it becomes all A is B implies all B is A. We've changed the order of the subject and the predicate in the conclusion.
For all 16
of those. And that is called the second figure. And that gives us a total of 32 moods in immediate inference. Now, you can sit down and write them all out. I don't know if Clark has done it here in the text or not. I don't think so. But it would be useful for you to go through and write them all out and then look at that second set of 16 and figure out which one of those are valid, if any. Here you have 32 moods in immediate inference, 32 possibilities. You reverse the subject and the predicate in the conclusion. So rather than it reading all A is B implies all A is B, it reads all A is B implies all B is A. You simply reverse the two in the second figure. I don't see that he does it in here, but that might be a good exercise. What's that? Does he give the answer? How many there are? There are four valid forms in the four valid inferences in the second figure. So out of the 32 possible forms of possible moods in immediate inference, there are 10 valid ones and 22 invalid ones. So you see offhand that it's easier to go wrong than it is to go right. It gets worse when you get to syllogisms, because in syllogisms you've got two premises, one conclusion, you've got one more premise, and you've got one more term. You've got three terms. And when you work out the moods of the syllogism, you end up with 256 rather than 32. And out of that 256 moods of the syllogism, there are only 24 that are valid in the syllogism. So there you have a chance of 10 to 1 to make a mistake in the syllogism. But let's go on here. Now that I've explained moods and figures a little bit, let's go back to page 43 in the workbook. We've had an answer to number 3. A difference in figure is a difference in term order, as in no A is B implies no B is A. Number 4. Among the two ways of determining validity for immediate inferences, the method that uses blank is deceptive as a proof. Now, first, what are the two ways that we've studied so far? What are the two ways of determining validity for immediate inferences?
Diagrams
and examples. And which one does Clark say is deceptive? No, I think he says examples. Yeah. He has his doubts about diagrams too, but he's... Right. Yep. A dubious assumption, he calls it there. But he wants to make the point that the examples can be very misleading. If you choose the wrong example, It can fool people very easily. Another method for determining validity is based on the assumption that the characteristics of the blank are precisely the characteristics of logical forms. This is where it's diagrams, the characteristics of the diagrams of the circles. There are blank individual cases or moods of immediate inference. It's none of these, it doesn't appear in the answers there. 32 is the answer. We've just had 16 in the first figure and 16 in the second figure. Blank consists of interchanging the subject and predicate of a proposition. What did I say that was? Simple conversion. Blank is valid for E and I, but not for A and O. Simple conversion again. Blank consists in replacing one form with another by contradicting the predicate of the first and changing the quality of the proposition. What is that manipulation called? G, obversion. And it's... Yes, it means if you start out with an all, you move to a no. If you start out with a sum, you move to a sum not. Okay. That's what we mean by quality here. And vice versa. Blank is valid for all four forms. Obversion again. Blank consists in contradicting both subject and predicate and interchanging them. Contraposition. Blank is valid for A and O forms, but not for E or I. What is it? Contraposition again. The prime symbol, the slash, downward to the left, in, for example, all A is B implies no A is, how do we read that? What does the prime symbol do? Okay, it contradicts whatever it appears after, whatever it modifies, whatever it's attached to. No A is B implies no B is A is valid by simple conversion. Remember I and E, simple conversion is valid. No A is B implies all A is non-B is valid by that's obversion. See, we've moved from the no to the all and we've contradicted the predicate. Yes, sir. The prime symbol contradicts whatever it's attached to. If it's attached to a term, it contradicts the term. B becomes non-B, so it's none of the above, probably. None of these. Sometimes you'll see it appearing after an entire parenthesis, and it contradicts everything in the parenthesis. Now the exercise on 45 is you have to tell whether or not the first and the second figures are valid. It's not written out in the textbook, but here it is. It appears in the workbook on page 45. All the 32 moods of immediate inference. Now let me stop there with immediate inference. You can continue working in the workbook. I should make an announcement. Several of you have asked me about an answer key, because you want to continue working in the workbook. And I will make them available to the church here, and they will either make them available to you or mail them out to you if you wish to get one. But they aren't available yet, but they will be available in a week or two. So if you want an answer key to help you continue working in the workbook, one should be available soon. Now I'd like to talk a little bit in our remaining few minutes here about the syllogism. We've given you examples of it before. There's a couple. But now I'd like to introduce some more terms having to do with the syllogism. So that you get a basic understanding of this form of reasoning. Clark points out that syllogistic reasoning is indispensable in virtually any discipline you go into. The difference, as I've mentioned, between the syllogism and immediate inference is you have one more premise and one more term. Instead of having one premise and one conclusion, you've got two premises and one conclusion. Now, the first premise that I want to talk about, should start out with by naming the terms. If I can get these all on here at once, I'll do this. Not going to work. Let me take this off. The major term, I've ticked it off here with a check. The major term is the predicate of the conclusion of the inference, of the syllogism. The predicate of the conclusion, the major term. Okay, what's the predicate of the conclusion in the first syllogism? Mortal. Mortal is the predicate of the conclusion in the first syllogism. That's the major term. The premise that it appears in is called the major premise. Perhaps you've read something where it's referred to the major premise and the minor premise. Well, the major premise is the premise in which the predicate of the conclusion appears. If all men are mortal. Okay, you can probably see what's coming next. It's the minor term. The minor term is the subject of a conclusion. Up here, second one from the top. The subject of the conclusion. The minor premise is the premise that contains the minor term. What's the minor premise? Well, what's the minor term in the first syllogism? Socrates is the minor term. So the second premise is the minor premise. That's called the minor premise. Okay, we've got the major term as the predicate, the minor term as the subject. There's one more term up there. Remember, syllogism has three terms. It's called the middle term. What is the middle term? Man. The middle term does not appear in the conclusion, but does appear in both premises. It drops out. In the flow of the argument, the middle term drops out. It appears in both premises, but not in the conclusion. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. There are four figures in the syllogism, and the figures are governed by where the middle term appears. But you need to understand these ideas about the major term, the minor term, the major premise, the minor premise, and the middle term. The middle term is the term that connects the major and the minor term. And oddly enough, it's called middle. Okay, let's look at the second syllogism. What, in the second syllogism, what is the major term? It's not one word now. We've got into one of these multi-word terms. Yes, go ahead. the son of a king of Israel, is the major term. It's the predicate of the conclusion. Okay, what's the minor term? Yes, sir? Absalom is the minor term. Okay, where is the major premise? Okay, this syllogism is a little bit trickier than the first one. Go ahead. The major term is this phrase here. So where's the major premise? Well, maybe it'd be easier to do the minor one first. If this is the minor term, where's the minor premise? It clearly has to be the second one. That's the only premise that Absalom appears in. So the major premise has to be the first premise again. What's the middle term? Okay, David is the middle term. Now that's a little bit trickier than the first one. That's why this, well, let me get a piece of opaque paper here. That's why this is the standard example in most logic textbooks. It's got one word for everything. Okay, are you clear on that then? Talking a little bit further about the syllogism, I want to introduce you to two more Latin phrases. One is the modus ponens, a Latin phrase meaning the way of constructing. In symbolic terms, it means if P, then Q. P, therefore Q. If all A is B, then some A is B, to take an example. Well, as a matter of fact, all A is B, therefore some A is B. If P, then Q. P, therefore Q. Now, the fallacy we talked about last night, asserting the consequence, is derived from, this is a valid argument. This modus ponens is a valid argument. But asserting the consequent makes the mistake not of asserting the P in the premise, but asserting the Q in the consequent. That's the mistake it makes. The modus ponens is a valid argument. If P, then Q. P, therefore Q. Probably. I think it's more likely from the fact that the P and the Q look so much alike. Yes. That's right. I think the saying is probably older than the symbolism here. Although that's a good application. The second one here, modus tollens, mean the way of destroying, and in symbolic notation again, if P, then Q, not Q, therefore not P. Now that is also a valid argument. It's a formally valid argument. It's on the basis of the modus tollens here that some recent philosophers of science, we talked about science last night, have said that what a scientist should do rather than trying to confirm theories is disprove theories. They should come up with hypotheses and experiments to test them, make predictions, And then if the predictions don't come true, if the result is not Q, they can rule out P. They say that's the proper procedure of science, not to discover truth, but to refute conjectures, refute guesses. And it's not quite that simple in experimentation, but at least they understand the logic of the situation. And the mistake that science again makes is asserting the consequent, not denying the consequent. Okay, any questions about any of this at all? Those two forms of argument which are valid, any of the terms of the syllogism? Now, in the chapter on, or in the two chapters, I think, on the syllogism, Clark will give you some Latin poetry, and he will also take you through creating diagrams for each of the 256 moods of the syllogism, the Euler circles. Because drawing those circles becomes somewhat complicated when you have three possibilities rather than two possibilities. On page, I think it's page 78 in the text, after all that, after he's taken you through all the reasoning processes, he gives you the conclusions in the form of five rules. The rules for judging the validity of syllogisms. And he tells you to memorize these. Each of these rules, these are only the only five rules you need for any syllogism you might come across. Two negative premises do not imply a conclusion. So if you see an argument saying something like, no cats are pets, and no pets are kind, that nothing valid can follow from two negative premises like that. Two negative premises do not imply a conclusion. Two affirmative premises do not imply a negative conclusion. You can't get a no in the conclusion if the premises are both affirmative. An affirmative and negative premise do not imply an affirmative conclusion. You can copy these down or look on pages 78 and 79 for the list in bold type. Two premises in both of which the middle term is undistributed do not imply a conclusion. You have to distribute the middle term in at least one of them. What does distribute mean again? All or no, modified by all or no. Two premises in which a given term is undistributed do not imply a conclusion in which that term is distributed. So you should memorize those rules for judging the validity of syllogism.